Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Weekly, we are brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Check out AllAccessMMA.com for a video podcast, MMA stories, and MMA news. The last show before Halloween, Ed. We're here. How's it going, brother?
Halloween's my favorite time of year, man. So I got the orange light in the background instead of our standard blue or purple light that I do. Because of Halloween, we're going to end the show on talking about our top five favorite horror. Matt's top five and my top five. I'm sure they're different, but it'll be cool to hear. I have a feeling I know one of Matt's, but you'll find out when he says it. But yeah, man, we took last week off, had some personal stuff to take care of. Busy with Spectation Sports. That's why I got the bags under my eyes, but we truck on, and as we truck on, man, we have to start obviously with the UFC's injury bug return. I feel like it's what was it, 2015 again, when cards started getting, main events started getting messed up like almost month after month.
Basically whenever anybody actually has any faith in John Jones showing up to fight.
Yeah, 2015, 2016. as somebody that has a soft tissue tear in his pec, well, I guess we'll start with that. Next month, UFC 295 is off I'm sure people will be looking for ticket refunds because neither Stipe Miocic or John Jones will be fighting on the main event in Madison Square Garden, because John Jones, in the middle of the night last night, tore his pec off the bone. Now, I have a soft tissue tear in my pec. I did it in 2016, and it's, you know, doesn't require surgery because I can still function or whatever. But when it's off the bone like that, and I wish we could have gotten my jiu-jitsu instructor, Brian Katz, on the podcast, because he's someone that tore his off the bone, and he can tell you firsthand that's no joke. I don't even know if the 8 month thing is as legit as they make it sound. I know when it comes to pro athletes, they get different treatment than us regular folk, especially with the Endeavor money behind John Jones. But man, that is that's a serious injury. And the clip, you could see he couldn't push himself off. I think it's a combination of him bulking up and overworking his own muscles. Plus, he's older and getting ready for the fight. It's just, you know, when you get older, you can't do the output that you used to. And I mean, the sweet takedown that he did, but obviously he couldn't execute it because that's when his pec tore, when he did the, when he tried to scoop in for the underhook. But yeah, that's a good thing you didn't get any tickets.
I actually like the new fights better. Me personally, one of the reasons I wouldn't go, and I wasn't, because I wasn't interested in Jones and Miocic really all that much. I was interested in that fight like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, but a part-time fighter is what Miocic is basically right now. He's a full-time firefighter against a guy who has fought once in 4 years. I wish all the best recovery for John Jones, but I also look forward to seeing information about his surgery, because I'm just going to say it, conspiracy theorist in me. We had mentioned USADA. We had mentioned New York. We had mentioned that maybe there would be
something. I've been hijacked. So overworked, I didn't even think about any of that.
I'm also going to point out that we have injuries that happen in MMA training by the dozens a year. And I don't remember the last time I saw somebody actually have footage from like 5 feet away at the exact time a fighter was hurt. Considering all the cuts and everything we've always seen, I've never seen footage of anybody. I've never seen footage of Tilly Gildeshaw getting hurt in training. I've never seen footage of anybody ever. So we just happened to have a video within about 6 hours of him supposedly getting hurt. A close-up of him doing the move and it being and perfect angle to see his shoulder and everything. We have the USADA situation. Conveniently, 8 months puts us right on about fight week next year. Just another one for you to add into the mix. I wonder, they know McGregor's coming back next year. Maybe they're loading up to try to stack the 2024 pay-per-view schedule with the John Jones in Vegas. The ticket sales were pointed out by somebody online were not great for this New York event. The resale tickets are
freaking expensive.
Correct. but they also is incentive for the UFC to pull Miocic and Jones. If you're not selling the gate you expect, why would you pay $10 million to those?
Yeah.
You can bring in two guys who are going to fight for like 70K each to replace them. So it's conspiracy theory. I don't like to do it because we've all seen what these warriors go through and the injuries that take place. But I'll just say it's an odd coincidence how it all seems to kind of be a situation we've never really seen before. And it just dawned on me, like I said minutes before, that if you go from November, December, then you're basically 9 months away. We're right now, we're like almost 9 months to the day away from what we would be dealing with for fight week next year.
And there seems to be a lot of funny stuff happening. Cause I mean, just before we started recording too, like after all this TKO merger and WWE, it looks like Endeavor is trying to go private again and sell stakes of the company and stuff like that. I know MMA, Damian Martin, MMA Fighting just put out a really detailed article on it, but it was like 30, 40 minutes ago. I was reading it as we were preparing to get ready to record. So I don't know what's going on the business end there. And, you know, Fightful had that article about Dana White pretty much praising his boss, Vince McMahon, under the new ownership, even though he talked about how Vince McMahon hasn't liked him in the past. So something funny is going on there, man. You know, these Illuminati folks in the world, I don't know what they do when they get their things together. Maybe because of the stuff going on in the world and where they were just at, there's just things that aren't coming out to the way that they wanted to. So they have to do some like housekeeping on the back end of the you know, rich people end. So I don't know, but everything you just said made me think of that, because it's just like you said, it's all funny. It's all real funny. Funny things. I mean,
Would you be shocked? Would you be shocked if we found out 6 months from now that he popped? I mean, if it shocks you, then you haven't paid attention to the sport for the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't. And I just, it's weird because like I said, we had clear footage of this injury happening in training. And it's like, where have we ever seen that before? I'm trying to actually think in my head if there's ever been a case where we saw video footage of somebody being injured with the thousands of injuries that have canceled fights over the years, you know? So that's a really good point. Have it so quickly available and it be front and center within minutes of the announcement, and and then the Asada combo, it all just makes somebody who's a borderline conspiracy person like me really, you know, light up and kind of go, wait a minute, what's going on here? What's going on here? And then I see the ticket sales and it's like, okay, now it makes a little bit of sense. If your gate's half of what you were expecting, you would get rid of the headliners that you're paying half the gate to. And
then New York with New York taxes and
they're paying for the arena. It's going to sell and it'll do its thing. But, you know, were they starting to see numbers that all of a sudden they weren't going to have the pay-per-views, you know? I mean, it's a fight to sell based off name value, but if you're really just looking at the sport as a sport, like it really is a fight that doesn't make sense. The top two heavyweights are really fighting each other now, you know, and that's no disrespect to Jones. He beat Gon, but he hasn't put in his dues at heavyweight. I mean, he's fought one fight at heavyweight. It's the same people who say, you know, Conor's the greatest lightweight of all time. He had one fight at lightweight. You know what I mean? Like, he beat Eddie Alvarez, but it was his only fight as a title fight at lightweight. I think everything else has been at 170 since then, you know? So, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, okay, we know Jones is a great light heavyweight, but the two best heavyweights, Aspinall and Pavlovich, are now fighting. It's a fight, honestly, I like better. Just because it actually is the future of the heavyweight division. We're already hearing that the Miocic Jones is going to be a double retirement. I honestly don't know why Jones's title's not stripped from him. It's because he's not one of the classy guys like the Horiguchis and the Pitbulls of the world who step aside and allow the division to go on. Because, you know, the real champion is going to be Aspinall and the Pavlovich winner, because the Miocic Jones winner is not going to fight them. It's going to be a double retirement.
Jiří Procházka and Alex Pereira are the main event, or the Aspinall
Pavlovich? No, the Pereira, That one's the main event now. Prasca. So the because it's the real title in theory. So the other one's the interim, but they're just that interim is going to become the real world heavyweight championship after Jones and Miocic fight. Jones just wants to be able to win and then say he's the greatest heavyweight of all time because he has the belt when he retires. That's all
John,
this is
John
about.
John Castaneda's on that card too. Last time he fought in New York, I think he missed weight when he was with Combate America. So I'm curious to see how he handles fight week in New York with the UFC. Interesting. I'm just looking at the card briefly. Well, I know that week we'll be doing our picks and stuff. Lord knows the card might change by the time we get to that.
Yeah, at this point, and we had this past weekend where we had the card change, and you know, I for me it was more exciting. I was the Usman Chimaev fight really lived up to its billing, I would say.
Yeah, and of course that's the one I missed because I was out. I do my errands on Saturday. But you messaged me, and I was like, I didn't get to see that one, and I didn't get to see the Johnny Walker doctor nonsense. I saw a lot of the other earlier nonsense, the 8,000 groin kicks and the fence grabs and everything else that the doctor. It seemed like they grabbed the doctor in Abu Dhabi at UFC 294, like old school. Like they were just like, hey, you in the crowd, you want to be tonight's doctor? Cool, you're it.
Yeah, you know that the whole doctor situation and. I saw Chael Sonnen post something and I have a little bit of an issue with something he said. He basically insinuated that the doctor would have been irresponsible human being for if he had sent Walker back into that fight because he believed he was concussed. What are we watching? Does that mean every cornerman who lets their fighter go in to the rounds after the first round is an irresponsible human being? How many concussed fighters are concussed halfway through a fight, and we let them shake it off and keep fighting? We have guys get dropped. We have guys get flash KOs. They can keep fighting. So I thought that was kind of a weird thing to say because I'm going. Wait a minute. What are we watching? First of all, it's the doctor is just judging on an instant who's concussed and who's not, who's confused and who's not. There's literally
never mind that thing though.
Like, in a foreign country. Said it pretty good. He said we both got broken English, you know, we both got accents. He goes, he's asking me a question. He goes, you know, and I saw Kaposa, Grabaki Hitman said, well, United Arab Emirates doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, you know what I mean, when asked where you're at. So I think he responded the desert, which he wasn't wrong.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like when they asked Dana White about it, and of course he's, you know, they're in business with those Emirates or whoever the hell runs all that. You know, they're like 10%, 11% stakeholders in that whole conglomerate that they have with the combat sports. So then they just extended a deal with them, so he wasn't going to badmouth them. He just blamed it on inexperience. Had it been here, anywhere else outside of Nevada, you know, New Jersey, New York, he would have dragged them at the post-event press conference. But that was definitely one of the most like, you could tell he just wanted to shake his head and get out of there. But one of the things, going back to the doctor, I mean, the thing that I got to witness, and I watched Josh Barnett update. I mean, I don't know what the latest update is, but I mean, if I get kicked square in the nuts and I can't, there's no way for me to fake that, like, and try to act like you can't perform a lie for that long. I don't care who you are, especially in front of that many people. And then when Josh, if you're one of Josh Barnett's guys, if you know anything about Josh Barnett and his history and people he trains, you know, he had to carry him out of the arena. And then he's posting updates from the hospital that the guys had one of his testicles was the size of a plum and colored, like, you know, obviously the guy was kicked in the nuts. So for the doctor to try to tell him that he did not get kicked in the nuts, his response was great. I think Kaposa put up the clip where he's like, it's all dick and balls. Like, what are you talking about?
Victor Henry. Yeah. The guy's a tough dude. He's fought all around the world. He's got like 40 career fights. I don't think that to defend the doctor on this one, where I didn't defend him before necessarily, most of the replays don't look like he got kicked in the nuts. So I can see a doctor who's obviously not all that educated on the sport, as he's proven that day, watching that replay and being like, yeah, no, you didn't get kicked in the nuts, because it's really hard to see. And but again, you're calling into question the character I'm not Josh Barnett, Victor Henry. Josh Barnett, you can call him his character in question if you want. He has a shady enough past in this sport where where you could go, I don't believe a word Josh Barnett says. Sorry, you could say it. He that's just what his career has done. He's multiple time tested positive, you know. I mean, it is what it is. I like Josh Barnett. I didn't miss a fight when he ever fought, you know, from every country in the damn world. But he you know, but the truth is, my thing is with Henry, like, like you said, you have to be a pretty good actor. You know, I think of like Wagner Prado in the UFC. I don't remember who he fought. I think it might have been Tim Kennedy or something back in the day, one of the early fight nights, where there was like a headbutt or an elbow or something cheesy as hell. Or he said he got hit in the back of the head and he laid around like he had just been snipered by an AK-47 and people are going, well, he didn't even touch you. Like, you know, and he faked it off, and it was the only last fight in the UFC. I think they cut him after that because it was pretty clear that he was putting on kind of a show and didn't want to be in there. This wasn't the case here. Like you said, this went on for a lot of time. He was arguing with the doctor about it. He didn't even hesitate. When the doctor said it wasn't it, like you said, he jumped on it and was like, yeah, no, it was 100% it. What are we talking about here?
You ain't going to tell me I didn't get it. If I got hit in the nuts and you try to tell me different, I mean, you know, I would have thought he was lying if he attacked the doctor, but the fact that he couldn't even get up. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been kicked in the nuts super hard, but I have.
Not to that extreme. No, I've never been kicked by a martial artist in the nuts.
Yeah, I got kicked. I mean, it wasn't by a high level martial artist, but it was all shin straight up the middle. And I dropped for, I don't know how long. I felt like throwing up. I thought I was going to pass out. Like, it is something debilitating, and you cannot, like, you know how what it looks like when you feel it. Same thing with liver shots. I've been dropped with quite a few liver shots in my 20s, and you know, honestly, I don't know what hurts worse. I mean, they're probably on the same level, you know. And it's just I guess one you recover from out faster because you know it's not between your legs. So
yeah, I don't think it's good. We shouldn't be challenging the legitimacy
I'm challenging the doctor, and I hope if they go back there, because I mean, not for nothing, it's not like they've never been there before. They've held so many events there. I was actually surprised that at that, the referee not calling a lot of the other stuff that happened, the fence grabs and the other low blows that happened. It was just a really odd event to watch. Overall, I mean, again, like I missed the Usman Khamzat fight in the Johnny Walker one, because that's when I was out and about. But I did make it to the very short main event. And I mean, like, what are you going to do? Like, 11 days notice. I mean, I feel like Volkanovski has nothing to be ashamed of. You stepped in on 11 days notice and you try to do what you could do in 11 days. You know, I still think the first fight speaks volumes they definitely, in my opinion, a third time, if they do it a third time, I think Volkanovski can win.
Well, I don't agree, but that doesn't mean that he can't win. You know, I don't see it happening. You know, I think Islam Makhachev is a special talent. And I think that we just saw a guy, we basically saw Khabib head kick somebody, you know what I mean? Like, that's something that we never really saw before. You know, Khabib had his wild striking and would occasionally land stuff and drop people, but it was more out of the fear of the shot and everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas Islam's kind of more violent.
More methodical. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of Volkanovski, but I also feel like that with his height and with his overall size now, like, I just don't know. Maybe, you know, there's no shame in defending your 145 belt and regaining your legs down there, you know?
His reason for fighting.
For guys moving up.
No, it doesn't. But in the post-fight press conference, like, his reason for fighting, I mean, and it doesn't seem like there's anything. He just seems to be one of these guys that, He's such an athlete from rugby to combat sports. It seems like if he's not in some sort of preparation, he was pretty open about it. Uh-huh. If he's not doing some sort of preparation, he says he gets trapped, you know, gets in his own head or whatever. And I understand that, but you know, it's on one hand, it's cool because he does that and he's like willing to fight again. He was joking around about stepping in for 295 yesterday or this morning. I forget when I saw a tweet that he put out, but it's like, you know, it's cool that he's like that, but then down the road, it's one of these guys you're going to be like, you don't want to be another Cowboy Cerrone and you know, have to end your career like getting, you know.
No, I understand why he took this rematch, because there's a chance that the rematch was never going to unfold. I mean, there's a chance that he loses to Topuria. There's a chance that he loses to somebody else at 145 eventually. There's a good chance he eventually loses at 145, and then that would have ended this. So he got his shot at his rematch, even though it was on 12 days notice. I get him doing that. He had his fight scheduled initially for January. That'll probably be pushed a couple months now, but it sounds like he wants to get back at it. It wasn't a long, grueling fight. Yes, he took the head kick, but he didn't suffer any kind of superficial wounds. You know what I mean? Like, so there's not a whole lot of healing other than just getting over just letting your head brain heal a little bit, you know, from the knockout. But it wasn't a long, grueling fight where his body was destroyed and stuff like that. So I think we'll see him back sooner than later. I think he just needs to go back to 145. I think it was a good idea. You know, it was a fun idea for him to come up and do that stuff. And he's helped save this event name-wise, name value and stuff. But I just think that, you know, it doesn't hurt to do it, but you don't want to flirt with it too much, because eventually it will hurt your legacy, because the losses are going to add up. We've seen what it does. I've already seen people online calling Volkanovski a bum. Like, that's where we've already gotten to. You know what I mean? So not that those people matter, because they really don't, but at the same time, we know how fickle MMA fans can be.
Especially now.
And so you get a couple losses in a row. I mean, that's two losses in a row now. You know, you just don't want to flirt with it, because once, and the UFC will do it too. The UFC's got your back right now. The minute they see the fans starting to not be necessarily as interested in your fights, they're gonna tell you to hit the road. So
yeah,
I would pick and choose a little more wisely. I'd
especially after they just did a whole contender series here.
That's what I mean. They'll replace you with a $10,000 guy overnight if the fans recognize that, you know, that contender series guy and give him, you know, any kind of credit and you know it. I'm also confused, and you can help me out. So we had the dude, the share guy fight with one eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? How does it work that we're in the middle of a fight and I close one of your eyes, the fight gets closed. But if you enter the fight with only one eye, it's okay.
That's a good question. And you know what, man? I mean, there's a fighter, Dre Milley, who's got one eye, and he's won his last seven. I think he's like I forget what he's 10 and something now. He's been fighting for a while, and he keeps tagging Bellator UFC, trying to get signed with them. In the meantime, he's fighting everywhere else, and he's got one eye. So obviously there are people that have a problem with it, and there are people that don't have a problem with it. So I don't know how that works, but I mean, apparently it works for some and not others. And, you know, Bisping, you know, had to hide his one eye.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm not for it or against it necessarily.
You're right to ask, how's it work? Because if Bisping had to worry about it, why didn't Sharipov I forget it. I know he's some sort of Magomed Sharipov.
Sharam Magomedov.
So
like, here's my stupid example, right? So let's say he has no left eye.
Yeah, right? Eye poke, and this is it. Yeah.
And you're punt jabbing the heck out of it, right? And it swells up his eye socket where there's no eye in it, right? It's just covered up. It's swollen up. You can't see out of it.
Closed, yes.
Does the doctor walk out there and go, can you see? And if he can't see,
that doctor might have.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand how you can. It's weird to me.
I will say this, though. Watching him fight enough times, I feel like because he's like that, And Dre Milley too. Like, it seems like that's why their striking is so active. Because if they're attacking, they don't have to worry about being attacked. You know, that's just a striking mindset. And I as busy as his kicks were, I was super impressed with that. I know, you know, his takedown defense has something to be desired. But I mean, he seemed confident enough to. You know, not be too worried about it and still attack from when he was on his back. But yeah, you bring up a good point, man.
Well, I mean, I wonder if this is one of those situations. Like, I'm going to look at it. I'm assuming he's never fought anywhere other than Russia or. Yeah. He has never fought in the United States. He's never fought in.
And something tells me we won't see him fight.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Is this just something where he's able to get away with it? I mean, we saw somebody enter the ring the other night with a cut. That was a new one too. They actually had stitches in their head when they came into
that was Breeden, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was different. I don't Why has there ever been a fight canceled due to a cut when you can just have it up and go in there?
Listen, they self-regulate when they go to places like that, and now we get to now you see like a lot of stuff seems to get to slide. You know, Mr. Rules and Regs, Mark, if they self-regulate, then of course you're not going to hold yourself back from holding losing a fight. You know what I mean? Like it's just
odd to me. It's just odd. Yeah. I would love for it to be like explained. Like, and if it no. is, if it was
and the questions way, were asked, like some folks were asking the questions, but again, they don't want to piss off the you know there's folks that allow them to hold those events. They have money invested in it, so they're not gonna shit on them. So.
Well, those same people are putting on an event this weekend. Not the exact same people. The same region of the country. Yeah. Saudi Arabia puts on Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury. Battle of the Baddest. Boxing match. Exhibition. Not real sure. They're fighting for the Riyadh championship belt apparently now. Listen. If we're going to have one of these crossover fights, this is the one I wanted to see. It's the two heavyweight champions of the world fighting each other. We just spent 30 minutes talking about UFC changes and Jon Jones. This is the real best heavyweight on the planet right now. That's just how it is for MMA. Ngannou, he's testing himself. He's going up against Tyson Fury. He's probably going to get smashed. I expect to see him on his ass within probably three rounds. If he gets up once, I might even be surprised because I think he's probably going to get blasted eventually. But I do look forward to him going out there and winging some crazy punches and at least putting maybe a little bit of fear in Fury, or at least making it a spectacle for 35, 45 seconds. You know what I mean? If we just get an all out rock 'em sock 'em brawl, you know, if he comes out like he did against some of his MMA opponents where he's just swinging for the fences. But, you know, I'm glad he's getting paid. I like that he's walking around with the fumbled bag, like purse or bag that he's carrying around right now. Mm-hmm. That's kind of funny. I think it shows some character. You know, I like Tyson Fury. I know he's kind of a knucklehead. He has his ups and downs, but I don't think he's bad for the world of sports. He's not a criminal. You know what I mean? He makes me laugh sometimes, and he seems like kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. Obviously, he's rich as hell, so he has no reason to not be happy. But
I mean, it's still boxing, and you know, more times than not, we see the boxer under boxing rules beat the MMA fighter in boxing.
For sure. We're gonna see it, and
I saw MMA Junkies footage from the open workouts today, and I sent it to we had Joseph Correa from. I tried to get him to come. I tried to get Hector Franco to come on, but I sent the clip to Joseph, my friends over at Front Proof Media, and I mentioned it to Joseph. I was just like, dude. Like I showed him the clip and I was like, and Joseph, who's a boxing aficionado and box himself, understands the sport, that type of striking better than I do. I was like, if he does this, if Francis Ngannou performs the way he did in the open workout, like Tyson Fury's just going to have fun with him. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't put a lot of weight into that stuff anymore. Mm. I mean, although the Dylan Danis stuff one really was pretty accurate. What we saw in that slideshow. And I watched it. I did.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. Fight Circus wasn't on at the same time, so I had to fight to entertain me. But
Fight Circus, at least they don't hide that they're fucking a circus. Like, they're silly. Like, this, that was
But they're not hiding it from me. Yeah. I'm watching it because it's a circus. If I thought it was actually anything legit, I wouldn't have given two flying shits about it. Yeah. You know, but you throw the circus act in, and I expected it. That one went how I expected. But this one, I kind of think it's going to go the not the same way as that fight, but I think this goes the way of, you know, Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley, I don't know, but I don't think it hurts either of them. It is what it is. You know, we might see a smiley face emoji from Dana White if he gets knocked out, something stupid like that.
Of course, we're going to see some hate.
You know, and we'll hear everybody will start saying Jon Jones. Oh, see, he is the best heavyweight. The kids call it. Yeah. We'll get all that nonsense left and right. But I don't know. I'm going to watch. It's on 2 p.m. your time. It starts the prelims.
Yeah, the first bell is at 2 p.m. Eastern. I think they were saying the main event will probably have the walk-ins will be like 5:30 p.m. my time, 5:40. So
pretty accurate to the other events out there.
Yeah, so it's an international pay-per-view. So nice early one if you want to get your fights in early and still have a night out weekend before Halloween. Other things happening this weekend, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Invicta FC is having their card in Boston, which is a first for them. It's on the 27th, which is Friday. And the homegirl, Jillian DeCourcy, will be in attendance as a fan just to kind of like, you know, help with the promotion and stuff of it. And so, you know, she's got quite the following. If you buy tickets and you see her, I'm sure she'll be nice enough to take pictures with you and stuff. But I actually thought about going, but, you know, Boston is quite a ways up north from me. But, you know, it's definitely a fun card to watch. And as of course, you can, if you have Access TV, the event will be on Access and on the Invicta FC YouTube channel. So that's a nice later in the night, probably. I'm sorry, Friday night. That's Friday, and the boxing is Saturday. So it should be a good weekend. It's a weekend before Halloween. And me and Matt, we're gonna list our favorite top five horror movies. So I just because I'm curious, because I feel like I know what one of yours are. I'd like you.
I don't know. I mean, okay. So you hit me up with this earlier today, and I'm at work, so I didn't have a time to really think too much about it. I mean, I have my sillier ones that I really, I mean, the ones I like there's the Wrong Turns and the stuff like that, but that might've been Eliza Dushku 20 years ago was maybe more interested in watching that movie and, you know, you know what I mean? So
I get it.
And there's some other ones like High Tension and stuff that I remember watching and it being like, that movie was great, but I have the DVD, but I haven't watched it in a decade. You know what I mean? There's, I have so many movies that I haven't, I used to be a huge horror fan. You'd actually be shocked if you saw my DVD collection. One day I'll pull it out.
It's in my bio. Like I am a horror.
I know you are. But it's one of the things about me you probably don't know is that I have a huge horror movie collection. I mean, I have probably hundreds. I mean, I have every Hellraiser. Yeah. I mean, I have my collection's crazy, as you can see. I'm kind of nuts when I start collecting stuff. But anyways, so I went through and I started thinking, okay, well, like literally like my favorites, what are the ones?
So before you even read it off, like, I don't want you to feel like you have to be married to these five because they rotate over time.
Correct. So. Time can change on how things are going. So I don't know if you want to do it in order. So if I look at this, I can do it in the best order. Let's say my number five is probably the most surprising one to me because it's newer as in like not in the 80s, but The Conjuring. I thought The Conjuring 1 was a very good movie. I watched it late. I watched it probably during the pandemic. And it was one of those ones where I used to be big into the horror movies, and then the world kind of changed and we started seeing a lot of film of real people dying. And I got older and it got harder for me to watch some of the stuff because it wasn't fake anymore. I was seeing too much of it in real life with all the chaos that we got going on this friggin' planet. So that kind of took away from the horror scene a little bit for me, and it maybe makes it sound soft, but kind of did. Conjuring was one that I liked because it wasn't mad gore, but at the same time it made me jump. It made me think. I also kind of liked that ghosty thing because it's not as far-fetched as a megalodon coming out, flying out of the ocean to eat somebody. You know what I mean? It's not something like that. It's like, okay, well, the spiritual world, kind of wild. So I gave mine to The Conjuring, made me jump more than once, and made me tell people, hey, if you haven't seen this movie, you should watch it. So that's where it comes in at number five for me.
Do you like all the sequels?
I do, but not good enough to make the list and not as good as the first one. I thought the second one was good. Yeah. But it kind of had it was a lot of the same stuff as the first, so it didn't have that originality that the first one did for me.
I could talk for hours about The Conjuring and the sequels and the source material and stuff like that. But yeah, no, that's not a bad pick. I liked it.
So that's my five. What do you got at your five?
Oh, my number five. I put Nightmare on Elm Street, the original one, as my number five. I actually have a nightmare of Freddy Krueger rash guard that I wear to jujitsu when I train near Halloween time. Just because, I mean, come on, there's a whole, you can see a documentary. It's actually on Tubi right now. What the hell is it called? Why is it slipping? It's literally like 4 or 5 hours long because it documents the making and the whole history of that whole franchise, which is pretty much my whole middle school, like, you know, like,
yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean, Freddy, the Nightmare on Elm Street was my first kind of like, Freddy was like the first dude, you know what I mean? Like, you knew about, mm-hmm. I knew about Jason, but I saw like, I think I saw part four. Mm-hmm. I think my mom stuck me into the movie theater when I was probably like 10 to see that. I mean, yeah. Whenever it came out. So I remember that. I remember number three vividly, mm-hmm. Especially the vein scene where they're walking along the side of the building.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's favorite one. Dream Warriors.
Yeah, three is probably my favorite of those. But number one is obviously the classic there.
Yeah.
I've been Freddy for Halloween. I've had professional fate makeup done. I have the gloves. I have the sweater. But he doesn't make my top five because he's not, as I
never, grew older. It just jumped in my head. Sorry. It's called Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy. If you have Tubi, you can watch it tonight on Tubi. It's a great documentary, and it actually says something about the second film, which Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. If you haven't watched it, you can watch it or just watch this documentary. And there's that Part 2 has a funny nickname. That's all I'm going to say about that one. But all right, yeah.
So my number four now. I'm going to go with my number four choice being Friday the 13th, part 6. Jason Lives.
That's the one I knew you're going to, I knew you're going to say Friday the 13th.
I had to choose between, I'm not a big fan of one because mm-hmm. Jason's not in it. It's a mm-hmm. little slow, especially like at a time in the 80s, 90s when I'm watching these movies mainly. Like, I needed to see some action, not some old lady who shows up, you know, like, and now she's old. She's probably younger than me in the movie now. But anyways, that two was, I had to choose between two and six. I like two because I like the rawness of the bag over the head and the mm-hmm. first time we see Jason and he's pitchforking people and it's real raw and real just grimy, yeah. You know, real grimy. Number six comes around after a couple failed ones. Some of the Tommy Jarvis stuff really threw me off. Not, you know,
six is which one? What's the title?
Six is Jason Lives. Okay. Six is when they basically said, okay, we're starting over from scratch.
Yeah, because I always...
Jason's now going to be a gigantic beast of a human being who's swinging people trees and they're sleeping bags.
Yeah, I always confuse the one with the girl that has the telekinesis.
Is that New York?
No, that's not New York. Okay, that's Jason Takes Manhattan. Yeah.
Okay, that might be eight or something. Then I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. That one's I'm not a big fan of that one.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
weird one. They like, we don't have enough weirdness with Jason.
Yeah, that was like Jason versus one of the X-Men. Every time I watched that, I was like, okay, so is she like a mutant? What's the deal here?
But, you know, yeah. But six to me is cool because you get like to me, that's like the real Jason. That's the Jason that went on for the next handful of films. The big dude, strong, like you said, his kills in that movie are just, I can't remember everyone off the top of my head, but the swinging the sleeping bag, I think he comes up on a couple in a sleeping bag. He rolls them up in it and swings them into a tree.
And that became a classic move. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For me, Friday the 13th, part 6 falls number 4 on the list, and probably my favorite 1A to 1B being number 2 in that series for me.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's good. I had it written down. I'm like, I know Matt's going to say, because I remember when we had Jillian on the podcast last, you had the little Jason action figure. I was like, mm-hmm. So he doesn't have that if he doesn't like Friday the 13th. So that's how I knew you were going to say it. At least one of your five were going to be Friday the 13th. My number four is kind of like cliche, obvious, but it's the original John Carpenter Halloween. And I will say, as we move forward on this list, you're gonna notice a trend in my next few horror films. But yeah, I like the original Halloween just because it's actually very, very reminiscent to the neighborhood I grew up in, where everything happens, Haddonfield, like back in the 80s, just the time and everything. Every time I watch it, it just makes me think of like how Halloween was when I was a kid, you know, with the kids all over the street. Just the ambience of it is why I picked that movie, not because of anything else. I mean, outside of Donald Pleasance's performance as Dr. Loomis in that is the one that stuck with me for a long time.
Tremendous. One of the greatest characters in movies.
Yeah. History. Yeah, so that's why I picked that, but more because of the visuals just bring me back to a period, you know, when I was those kids' age, not any of the major characters, but the actual children. Like, that's when I saw that, and I could relate to it, and just, it makes me that, like before Michael Myers ruins Halloween, it just makes me think about how fun Halloween is before people start murdering each other.
All right. Well, so that brings me to three. Now, I might call an audible right here because it, you know, like I said, didn't have a lot of time preparing. This was kind of a... So initially, I had my two and three were Halloween's one and two.
Mm.
Obviously, my number two is Halloween because of many of the things you just said. I love the griminess of it. I love the just the straightforward killing machine that is Michael Myers. Mm-hmm. I like the whole premise. I think everything about it is great. I think Michael Myers is one of the coolest, like, just horror movie characters of all time. And I know that's not, you know, breaking news, but I think the simpleness of it, the white mask, the basically like Dickie's jumpsuit, like, to me, it's like, you know, it's as simple as it can be. You just got the psycho who's going after, it turns out to be his family and all this stuff, but they don't know it because, you know, it's just, you know, and then you bring in Donald Pleasant as Dr. Loomis. You know, I mean, me and my cousin still to this day are quoting Loomis you know, and just, you know, seeing all these memes about how the world would have changed if they just would have ever listened to the doctor one time. So my number three was going to be part two because part two flows. I love the flow of it where it starts off where the first one ended.
Yeah.
For me, that's how they always should be.
Yeah.
However, after just thinking about this and it not popping into my head earlier, it's going to be a wild card. I love Halloween Part 3. I love Season of the Witch. I love the Silver Shamrock. I love that it's so weird that you expect that everybody, I'm sure I was one, there's not a person who grew up in the 80s or 90s who didn't walk into a VHS store, but rent Halloween 3 and not know what the hell they were watching when they got home. I like that movie. I like it. It's one that I can watch over and over again. I've seen it a million times. The whole idea of it's kind of crazy, where you got a company putting out masks that are going to kill all the kids on Halloween, basically melt all their brains. Yeah. They're these cheap, crappy, generic Halloween masks that you couldn't have got me to wear as a kid for anything in the world. But they made a movie where everybody wanted them, and even to this day, occasionally I'll go to a Halloween store and I'll see one of those on a shelf, and it kind of makes me laugh and chuckle. So Season of the Witch, kind of a weird one, but I'm gonna throw that in there.
It's definitely deserves mentioning. And here's the funny thing about it: a lot of people think that because Halloween is John Carpenter's thing, and he does the music for part three, but he didn't direct it. A guy named Wallace, I forget the first name of it. His last name is Wallace, is the director. It was one that directed it, but he did do the musical score for it. So because of the music, and oddly enough, the way that the movie goes, like the way it ends and stuff like that, it's very apocalyptic. Like, it's very ambiguous, open ending, which is how a lot of John Carpenter's greater films ended. Just because to segue into my number three, it's They Live by John Carpenter.
Roddy Piper.
So, I mean, for so many reasons, but that used to be lower on my list. Again, like we said, lists can change. But just because of everything that's been happening lately, with the way, you know, the governments, the country's being run and stuff like that, They Live just... I've watched it a couple of times in the last 12 months, and it hits a little harder closer to home. So that's why it's on my number three. I mean, you kind of said your two and three.
My two is the original Halloween. Yeah. So you might as well do your two real quick and we'll hit the ones.
Yeah. So my number two is Trick or Treat, with Sam, the little pumpkin headed kid they're playing it on TV a lot right now. I can't believe I forgot the director's name. It slipped my head just because
I think I've seen that one.
Oh, you never seen it? So
I don't think so.
Michael Dougherty is a director. So I love horror anthology stories. I'm a big fan of Rod Serling and Twilight Zone and stuff like that. So it's one of those movies. It's an anthology, but it all happens on Halloween night, and all the stories kind of interweave. And it was kind of one of these movies that if it was in a theater, I didn't know about it, but I remember bringing it home. You know, I saw the cover, I rented it and brought it home back when you still went to stores to rent movies. And I watched it and I was just like, I was so like, I was so impressed with how the stories weave together, and it was an anthology, but they still managed to connect them. If you haven't seen it, man, it's 2007, Trick, the letter R, and then Treat by Michael Dougherty. It's definitely worth seeing. It's like it's the movie that kind of put him on the map. He wound up directing Krampus after that. And I just read today that he's working on a sequel to Trick or Treat that everybody's been kind of waiting for him to do. But if you haven't checked it out, man, I highly recommend it.
No, I definitely will. I think I know what your number one is now. I think I know what your number one is, but I'll go with mine first here. My all-time favorite horror movie has been since the day I saw it the first time. The 1974 classic, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original. Again, like some of the other ones, I love the raw griminess of the film footage.
Mm-hmm.
I like the pretend that this is a true story. Mm-hmm. I like the wackiness of the characters. The dude talking about head cheese while cutting his hand in the beginning. You're just kind of going, what kind of psychos are these? Them rolling the grandpa out to hammer a person's head. The hanging the woman on the hook. And then Leatherface just being a mysterious, you know, you have all these other movies where they've shown, you know, like they've kind of bastardized like the actual character of this. You don't really know. He's just this mysterious monster of a human being. And he's running after people with chainsaws and torturing them.
It's just loud and fast.
It's loud and fast. And one of my favorite Halloween costumes, I was him. I had a good mask. I had body parts hanging off me tied. And when I fired up that chainsaw, now it didn't have a blade on it, but when I fired up that chainsaw and walked into that Halloween party, I'll never forget that shit. It was so much fun. For me, it's that movie, the raw, the dirtiness of it, the whole. Those are the kind that I appreciate, especially the older movies. And like I said, it's gore, but it's not pulling out intestines and eating them or cook, you know, it's not The Hostel. It's not some of that other stuff, you know, the Cannibal Holocaust and some of the other crazy nonsense.
I'll tell you the scene that sticks with me the most, that's a really good pick, because Leatherface, when he takes that first dude out in the house that you get to see him, when he hammers him, you know, he lures him in with the squealing of the pig, and then he hits him with the hammer.
The door.
That door slam, and the just like, you know, because it just looks like a house, a regular house, and when he slams that door, just the shine from the steel of the door and everything, it just changes the whole dynamic and the sound that it makes when he slams it. Like
that's like the only sound. It's just that slam, and then the screen. You get horror
it's
movie.
A great,
kind
of, it is a great film. It's, I mean, Tobe Hooper's like masterpiece, and. You know, so many people have tried to copy and replicate him or be him or whatever the hell Rob Zombie tries to do. And I'm just like, no, you're not going to do it. There's only one of these guys. You know, do your own thing. Be original. Like the guy that does the X films with, you know, Mia Goth with the X and Pearl and then the one that's coming out soon. Like, be original like him and do your own thing. You can drop little hints that Hooper had an influence on you, but do your own shit. Stop trying to copy other people.
You mentioned Rob Zombie, and one of my also mentioned would easily be The Devil's Rejects. Now that you mention him, that movie, I love that movie. You know, another one of where it's just crazy characters and stuff. So I think I know your number one. I think it also starts with the word the, but I'm just going to let you go and see if I'm correct.
No, you're right. It's The Thing. I let it go. I did a podcast where I was a guest once, and they asked me something personal, and we talked about horror movies, and I gave that away. So if anyone's ever seen that interview, it was with Simon that was on the podcast, his Rolling with Simon podcast that he used to have. I mentioned it on there, but yeah, that's just, you know, there's just so much about that film that I could literally watch it over and over and over again and find something interesting about it. And just, the way, cause there is a thing movie that, you know, they made it in some black and white movie, and the monster's like just some Frankenstein monster, but John Carpenter's version is the closest thing to the source material, which is a short story called Who Goes There, that he did such a good job with it. I like The Thing. I like its 2011 prequel with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I know a lot of people didn't because of the CGI, and Carpenter's, you know, he used that technology didn't exist when The Thing came out, Carpenter's film. But it's just a great movie, because the thing, even though you do see it, the fact that it could be anybody is what makes it, you know, the feeling of paranoia. And then adding that to you guys, I complain about the fucking winter enough on this podcast. The fact that it's so cold in that movie just adds to the suspense of everything and the uneasiness of it. So that's why that'll always, I know we said movies rotate for me, but that'll probably always be my number one.
Yeah, no, you've mentioned that on this podcast probably half a dozen times, at least something about the thing or something like that. I kind of figured that was it. There's a lot of good ones, man. I mean, it really could put together probably more of like a top 25 where it would be like, you know, but you got your favorites, you know, like for me, it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre is always going to be number one, you know, for you is the thing, you know what I mean? It's just, it might be when you watched it, how you watched it, how, you know, what it, you know, meant to you when you watched it, where, you know what I mean? Like it was just one of those things where that movie was so, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was so raw and just so, it was so cool to me the first time I saw it. I don't even remember the first time. I mean, I was probably an early teenager, you know, but
I remember seeing it. I was young when I saw it, and I remember because like you said they make it seem like it's this real, and I remember thinking, I was like, oh wow, this really happened. Then, you know, of course I got older, I found out that half these freaking horror movies are based on stuff that Ed Gein did, the real guy that's based on, and a couple of other serial killers that they based stuff on. So I'm just like, you know, real life horrors, which is why, like, the whole thing with The Conjuring, man, we could do a whole podcast on the source material for The Conjuring, because I read up so much on that. I don't like James Wan, but I do like those movies because I know the true stories that he's pulling this stuff from, so just to see what he does with them, you know. But I don't like the director. I don't like any of his stuff. I don't like any of his stuff, and I actually don't like any of his Rob Zombie stuff. But
I haven't been a fan. The only Rob I liked, the first two Rob Zombie things, the Devil's Reject and the, what was the other one? The Thousand Corpses.
House of a Thousand Corpses.
I thought that one was really weird, but I that one grew on me. But I think we got some good ones. I think I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch some of the ones I just named, because I feel like I haven't watched them enough. Halloween, I've got my fill. And I feel like the Season of the Witch will probably be popping on TV any moment here.
But it's literally on all the time at AMC. I feel like every Saturday they show it. But it's a good one. I do like it.
I like it. It's not scary. It's not, to me, it's just kind of I just think it's a cool movie. So, you know, I could even argue maybe it's not even quite a horror film. It's almost more of like a psychological thriller in a sense.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the, you know, and when I had heard about it,
hate on Tom Atkins getting ass, because he gets ass in every movie that he was in back then. So
yeah, that guy's. I was like, I don't know if it's because I always confused him with like Chuck Norris and everybody else. He had this kind of like,
he's right up there with them. And I don't know if he could fight, but he's definitely up there with them.
Oh, that's funny, but yeah, some great movies. So you mentioned Invicta. One other thing that caught my attention just quick for this Friday, Valor BK is back. And that was Ken Shamrock's event, bare knuckle event that he had before. It looks like they're having a second event. I don't know if Shamrock's running it or if somebody else did, but LeVar Johnson, Travis View main event, which is kind of a throwback fight for anybody. So I don't know how easy that'll be to find on Friday, but I hear that's coming around. So
I got a press release on that. Actually, you're talking about it.
You know, and then we'll you know, other news. We'll look forward to talking about Eddie Alvarez and Mike Perry, because that's probably the best news that I've heard in a long time when they announced that fight.
Jacksonville. You're talking about
the Valor one's in Jacksonville. It's not at a big arena, it's a little small arena, but I don't recognize a lot of the names, but like I said, LeVar Johnson obviously made a name in the UFC and Strikeforce, and then Travis View fought everybody, and I mean literally has over 100 career fights. So interesting. I'm just, you know, I like seeing these promotions pop up. I was always wondering what happened to that one. So, you know, I wouldn't mind if Shamrock has his hand in it, because you always like to see somebody.
Yeah, he does. They still call him in the press release. They call him the face of the founder of Valor Bare Knuckle. Yeah.
Cool. So I'm going to try to tune into that and Invicta on Friday, and then Ngannou and Fury on Saturday. Until then, fans can check out the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMA Hawk 21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbizol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, Oldhead Carb on Twitch. And again, you can always check us out at allaccessmma.com. Check out allaccessmma.com for our video podcast, MMA news, and MMA stories. Also, check out the Bloody Good Show website with a link to our show as well. And a bunch of other fighters that dude keeps adding to his roster. So enjoy the weekend, everybody. Enjoy Halloween, and we will see you in November. Yep.
Happy Halloween. See you next week.